You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
It's a cultural wasteland filled with inappropriate metaphors and an unrealistic portrayal of life created by the liberal media elite.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Oh, what's going on, Philadelphia?
No, 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 no. Oh, thank God. Oh, my God. Yes, we won. We won the f***ing Super Bowl. That's it. That's it. That's it. Is it? Oh my God! Oh my God!
Maybe someday. That's Kobe Bryant, noted Eagles fan.
So what are we down to now in this league of ours?
For no Super Bowl championships?
Browns.
Lions.
Lions.
Vikings.
Cardinals, correct.
Yeah,
Cardinals went to one in the past, 5 years or whatever. Don't
Chargers.
Have Vikings. It's getting
Bills.
Bills 0-4.
There's some AFL teams. The NFL teams, I think it's down to it's Cardinals, Vikings, Lions. Unless I'm missing somebody.
The NFC, you mean?
Well, and old NFL.
Oh, okay. The Browns actually were an old NFL team that transferred to the AFC when they merged and broke up into conferences.
Yeah.
So is there about five, though?
Boy.
Are we at about five?
Hey, if the Vikings can land a top-notch quarterback like a Nick Foles for 2018. Okay, real quick, as our reckless speculation continues, if you gun to the head right now, your quarterback for the next 3 years has to be Case Keenum or Nick Foles. Gun to the head right now.
Because
three weeks ago I said, oh my God, Case Keenum's better than Nick Foles.
Save your bullets.
It's Nick Foles.
It's got to be Nick Foles. Save your bullets. Put your bullets away.
Dude,
put your holster up your gun, and I'm going to give you Nick Foles.
He was insane. I saw some number. He completed 73% of his passes in the postseason. And the only other two guys to do it are like Joe Montana and somebody else, both Hall of Famers. He just went completely bat bleep crazy and turned into a Hall of Famer.
His numbers on third down were unreal. Specifically between him and Zach Ertz. Like, look towards Ertz on third down, and it's almost a guaranteed connection.
In the playoffs on third down, the Eagles were 26 of 43.
Is that good?
That's 60%. The highest, now granted that this is over a longer time period, but the highest in the regular season of any team, I think it was the Falcons, 45%. They were converting third downs at a 60% clip. They were 10 of 14 against the Vikings on third down.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. Okay, I'll admit that I was wrong on something here. And I pushed back at you on this toward the end of the season. And I was half wrong on this, I guess. When you were sounding the alarm about the Vikings offense late in the season, that, you know, they kind of looked a little rusty against Chicago and even against Cincinnati. They just didn't. It wasn't quite the same offense we saw in the middle of the season. I said, you got to stop worrying about that. Their formula to win doesn't revolve around scoring 30 points. It's about the best defense in the NFL, holding teams to 17 points, to 14 points, 16. That's how they win games. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, now that you saw the next gear that the Eagles were able to get to, because the Eagles' formula was pretty similar for the better part of the season. They had a better offense statistically than the Vikings did all season, but you know, with the exception of a small handful of games, they were holding opponents to like 13 points a game at home, right? They didn't need to score 30 to win games. But when they had to, when their defense didn't step up, as we talked about at the top of the show, they could reach deeper into the bag of offense and they could pull out a trick play here, a big pass down the field there, a 38-point performance over here, 40 points. Go beat the Rams on the road, score 40 points, right?
They could outscore
They
could outscore you if they absolutely had to, yes.
And so while I still think, based on what the Vikings' formula was, it was revolving around defense. Like, I didn't think they had another level offensively to get to, really. I mean, you weren't going to score 40 points with Kate. You just weren't. That wasn't their formula. But going forward, if you want to start to beat teams like the Patriots, like the Eagles, when the stakes get even higher,
yep,
you're just going to have another gear that didn't exist for them in 2017.
Well, and I guess my point would be this, too. If you look at this offense going forward, and Cook is going to be back, and let's say you improved the line a little bit, and let's say you go get a big-time tight end, well, then you can take what you started in 2017 and build. You could get to the point, if you got the right pieces in place, if you did that, then you could say at some point very soon, okay, our defense is still great. It's fantastic, and it's the bell cow of our team. But that being said, if push comes to shove, if we go to Philadelphia and all hell breaks loose, guess what? We could score a lot of points too.
Right. Multiple blueprints to win. That's what you want. You don't want to be like the Gopher football team for even when they get, you know, when they had Glenn Mason and they had a bunch of NFL caliber players on offense. If they didn't get up by two touchdowns on you and grind you for 350 yards rushing, like that was their only formula to win.
Right.
And when you put a wrench into it, oh, now you got to throw because you're down by 14 on the road against Michigan or somebody. And okay, well, dead. Good luck. And that's kind of the Vikings. You know, they didn't have to show the other side of it because they won so many games with that formula. But then you start to play on the road or against a New England if it would have come down to that.
That's the difference.
And you're not going to beat New England 20-16. Yes. You're just not.
You need a team that is prepared in this league to beat up on your long list of mediocre to potentially bad teams. But eventually you're going to meet the Eagles and Patriots. And so now the question becomes, if you've got your one blueprint, you can beat the Lions, you can certainly beat the Browns. Okay.
And even the Saints, it took literally a miracle play.
You should have lost that game.
Yeah.
But that's my point. My point is you can be successful and a very good team with one calling card throughout the course of a season in which you play a lot of teams that aren't that great.
Yeah.
But then when you get to the playoffs, you're going to play three or four teams that are fantastic. And if you've got one thing going and that breaks down against those teams, you're not just going to lose. You're going to get shellacked like you did by the Eagles.
Yes. Back to our conversation from before the commercial break. One thing I noticed, I don't know if you guys got the same thing. Dave said he was at Super Bowl experience. The volunteers were awesome. There were like 10,000 volunteers that worked.
They're all smiling.
Various parts of the 10 days. Couldn't have been more helpful.
Yep.
Whoever organized the thousands of volunteers. I mean, there downtown Minneapolis on Saturday was, first of all, there was like 5 inches of snow. You had absolute cluster bleep of people trying to get in and out of the skyways and restaurants and bars and overflow crowds and stuff. And the volunteers could not have been more helpful, friendly. Not that we would expect anything like different. It's a big time operation, but I'm just, other than it snowing a little bit and it being too cold for people who aren't from cold weather cities, I can't think of one major thing that was like, oh man, Minneapolis or St. Paul really dropped the ball on this huge event. It was multiple venues. We're talking Target Center, XL Energy Center, Mall of America, Convention Center, Northrop Auditorium, right? National television.
All over the
celebrities
place,
coming in. 1,500 private jets coming in from
it
around the country.
It consumes your entire town. My favorite volunteer was at the mall last week. And this poor guy had a smile on his face the entire time. On the third floor where we were, when you went to the bathroom, and they had a volunteer standing there. And I don't even know exactly why, because it was clear where you should go. But anyway, this poor guy was stationed there, back by the bathrooms. So, like, you can't see a thing. You're just standing outside two bathrooms. And he couldn't have been nicer. And I'm thinking to myself, bathroom guy, you know, if I volunteered, if I raised my hand and I said, you know what, committee, I want in. And they said, okay, Judd, you're bathroom guy. I'm probably going to be like, no, you know, I guess I don't want in so bad. Bathroom guy was
too many opportunities in this climate. There's too many opportunities.
Bathroom guy had a smile on his face the entire week.
Are you talking at the Mall of America?
Yeah, at the mall back. But the
guy was really nice.
He was really nice the whole time. And it's like, I didn't need to ask any questions because it was very clearly said men, women.
You know what I think it was? I think there was a door, some sort of a staff-only door in that corridor. So I don't think he was trying to help you find the right bathroom, unless you were blind or something.
He was outside.
I think he was protecting one of the staff-only doors.
Okay. It's still
and just
really...
there to smile and say hi and help you shake it out if you need to.
It's still a... It's still a tough job, and he did it very... He did it with a smile on his face all week long, and I give him a lot of credit.
Without being too creepy.
That would be tough. I would not want that job.
We went from NFL experience down to Super Bowl Live via the Skyway Saturday to escape the snow a little bit, and there were volunteers at every single point of the Skyway. It was fantastic. You know, where are you headed? Experience? How you nickel it? That way. Go that way. Go that way. People... Yeah. Directing you wherever you needed to go. There was three people at every little intersection helping anybody who was lost. The only thing I couldn't stand was the amount of volunteers that asked me, hey, did you download the NFL app?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you get that?
No, I didn't download the bleeping app, and I'm not gonna. Just because Roger said you had to ask me how to download the app, I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah, they were definitely pushing their app, too, on media, too.
I didn't get that one. Not once.
I remember when I checked in at least once at one of the media checkpoints. Now, make sure you download the app. And she had me like a card that had the name of the app on it. And like, thank you. Now we're wasting paper and technological space on my phone.
Oh, one of them asked me. I said, nah, I don't really want to. Here, give me your phone. I'll do it for you.
No.
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 No,
no you won't. No. I will be keeping my phone. Thank you.
You're no volunteer. You are not getting my
you're
phone.
You're being too friendly at this point, volunteer.
Yeah, you've crossed that line. This Minnesota Nice has to stop.
If you want to chime in with any of your experiences throughout the week, 651-646-8255. You can also email us, MackieandJudd@1500ESPN.com. And, you know, we'll take any stories you have or if you have any reviews. You know, we've got another big event coming next year with the Final Four coming to town. And you know what? Other than it being kind of cold, we get it. If you can't stand the cold, then just stay in the Skyways or stay inside or in one of the venues that it wasn't like people had to be outside. If you're outside, you're sort of, unless you wanted to go to the Super Bowl Live and whatnot. Everything is inside. It's not that big of a deal. I did see some of the red carpenters from NFL Network in like their gowns and stuff. So Melissa Stark Instagramming photos in sorrel boots and like a sequin gown trying to run from somewhere outside to... That's your fault though, you know?
February in Minnesota, everyone knew what they were getting into when they signed up for this.
Correct. And then we'll get to some of the other festivities here too. I thought there were two pretty good commercials. Otherwise, and you were in the stadium, so you probably didn't see many of the commercials.
I did not. I saw one and that was it.
Okay. 651-646-8255. Let's talk about the number one RE/MAX results team in the entire country for a reason. It's the Chris Lindahl team. And the entire experience I went through, which is about a year ago now, it was mid-February that I sold my condo for a lot more money than I ever thought. It's the level of expertise and marketing that you get with the Chris Lindahl team. They create a competitive environment for the sale of your home. So they're pulling all kinds of people from their own databases. They're connectors. And they're doing things in a way that not a lot of people are doing in 2018. So if you want to make more money, maybe tens of thousands of dollars more money on the sale of your home, Chris Lindahl is the team to work with. You can go to chrislindahl.com. That's Chris with a K. Or call 763-401-SOLD. That's 763-401-SOLD. There's a reason why this is the number one RE/MAX results team in America. Chris Lindahl, back with more Mackie and Judd.
Mackie and Judd now continue.
I want you to do it. The good Lord wants you to do it.
You really think so?
I know so.
On 1500 ESPN.
I mean, you have to understand, we got the actual real vocal stems from I Would Die
That's
For
like
You.
The nerdy stuff from, question.
Yeah,
bro.
Exactly. The record, you see, you didn't want to go in, but let's go in. We got the actual vocal stems from I Would Die For You, the actual recording, and then we got uncut footage from his performance of it in Purple Rain, and somehow, some way, by the grace of probably Prince looking down on us, it synced up. Like, it was like this, like, crazy serendipitous moment, and I just was like, this is like...
It was a beautiful harmony.
I don't know. I just wanted to use that opportunity to do something special for this city, but most of all for my favorite musician of all time.
Yeah.
Boom. That was from Fallon, I'm assuming, right? Yeah, his appearance on Fallon, Timberlake. 651-646-8255. We'll keep open phone lines for another 10, 15 minutes or so. So, A, I love Justin Timberlake. I'm a big fan. I think a lot of people associate him with NSYNC still and have not given him a chance. He's one of the top I would say, pop musicians in the world the last 15 years. He's awesome. Like, if you're still ripping on Justin Timberlake because, oh, he was in NSYNC and NSYNC is corny and it's a boy band, I think you're missing out on a lot of his good stuff. But can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Did you guys see all the hubbub? Like, Sheila E. had to call Justin Timberlake to make sure
about
that
the hologram.
He didn't do a hologram. Yes. That they had a hologram planned.
Yes, on Saturday night. I saw all of it.
And instead they went to the video footage instead.
On like a sheet. Yes, I did see that too.
Like, so apparently Prince said, A, that holograms are demonic, and B, if I was meant to collaborate with artists from the past like Duke Ellington, I would have lived in a different era. Whatever's meant to be will be. Don't try to recreate it with holograms, okay? Do we really need to make such a big deal over that? Demonic? Demonic? If you want to pay tribute to somebody, is it really demonic?
Well,
like, is the intent really demonic?
Did Prince really say all of this?
Yes.
Or did this, I mean, I don't
know. Yes, he's quoted as saying it's demonic.
I honestly, personally, don't care. Like, it's fine. If they want to do it, it's fine.
It's all,
if they
it's don't, all out of but, respect and in
But
in
I thought
tribute.
The thing on Saturday was crazy. Because it was as if they were going to drag his name down. Right? I mean, they acted like, if you do, I hope this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I hope there's no hologram. And it's like,
that seemed really self-important.
First of all, this is
Prince was pretty self-important, but yeah.
Sure. But the point being, first of all, this is the Super Bowl halftime show, okay? This is not like some real concert. Like, this has become long ago an attempt to gain, I guess, as much publicity and to gain people talking about it in a very short period of time. So, like, to act like the Super Bowl halftime show is some ode to music, it's not. It's supposed to generate people basically talking. So I was surprised that on Saturday night, my entire Twitter timeline for a while was filmed up with, oh my God, if you have the hologram, Prince is going to come back and he's going to strike all of you down.
Yeah, here's more Justin Timberlake with Jimmy Fallon talking about it.
Minneapolis, Minnesota, this one's for you. Nothing wrong, nothing bad. I am something that you never understand. I'll never beat you, I'll never lie. And if you're evil, I'll forget.
It's a moment for me, if I'm being quite honest, because he's always been the pinnacle of musicianship for me. And when we decided that, like, the serendipity and synergy that we would be in Minneapolis, and that, you know, he's such a special thing here, aside from what he is all over the world, I just felt like I wanted to do something for this city and something for him that would just be the ultimate homage to what I consider the GOAT of musicians.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a huge level of respect. So if he was going to go hologram and then was told, call it off at the last minute.
Which I'm sure he was, yeah.
You can just hear the way he speaks. And you can just see in the way that he has crafted his own solo career for 15 years. It's very similar to the way it's very instrumental. And it's sort of outside the box in a lot of ways. So, yeah. If he would have gone hologram, I know that Prince called it demonic. But I think that would have been a little over the top. A little over
what
the top.
They did was
we
fine.
Scared him out of doing the hologram.
What though. They did was absolutely fine.
Yeah,
I agree that up until that point, it was really boring.
It was. I feel like he tried to cram too many songs in. He had like how many songs did he do? He did parts of like 7 different songs. It was fine. It's not going to be. It's not the most memorable necessarily, other than the Prince tribute.
I thought the Prince thing was when I finally got interested, and then I thought he closed it out well. I thought the rest of the show was just a snooze fest.
It's better than the 1992 Metrodome Super Bowl halftime show. Did you guys see that floating back around?
Which was what again?
That was
up with people or something.
What's her face?
It was a combination of Gloria Estefan.
Yes, that's right.
But it was like a Brian Boitano was like skating around.
There's, the U of M marching band was in that one as well as with Timberlake, but they were in their regular marching duds for
it was
92.
So
I told you guys, the next step for this league, you take the halftime show, have it in the city the game is being played, in a venue. So you take it out of the stadium. You put it in a
theater.
Why
do you want it out of
sort.
The stadium, though? What's the
because it'll draw it'll draw people, and now there's a rush to get everything out there as quick as possible to get the performer out there. I think it's a half hour show. Okay, so my point is, instead of having this entire rush to get the performer out there and then to get the whole set broken down and get the teams back on the field, you put it in a separate venue in that city and have it as a performance, and you sell tickets and fans go.
I think they like the half hour, though, because it gives them 18 more chances for commercials and sponsors.
Sure, but I'm still saying it could still be a long time. It can still be way beyond what a normal halftime show is. But my point is, if you put it in a theater of some sorts, I think it gets better.
You know, the Eagles at practice, apparently this week, they stopped practice after like an hour and just sat around for 30 minutes to simulate halftime. And that was the big thing. Brett Favre spoke to the team on Saturday morning, and his big message was, hey, the beginning of the game and the pregame is so long, and you're out there, you're at the stadium in the beginning of the game, and you're going to be so jacked up, you're going to want to make sure that you don't blow all your energy by the time halftime rolls around. Then you have to sit around for 30 minutes. So obviously they had prepared mentally and even just like physically, let's sit for 30 minutes during practice and then fire it back up. You could see how that would be tough, right?
Oh,
where
yeah.
You just like you build up all this momentum
and you're
in the first half.
And just going to sit down and don't do a thing, yes.
Yeah. So the two commercials that stood out, and maybe Dave saw more than I saw all the commercials, and the only two that really popped for me that I kind of laughed at or just, I don't know, they stood out. The Dirty Dancing, Eli Manning, and Odell Beckham Jr.
They showed that one in the stadium.
That was pretty funny.
That was great because it kept going throughout the whole game. Those little snippets of Eli, like 10 seconds here.
Oh, that's how they, okay.
Yeah, and you couldn't figure out what is this? What's he talking about? Then they put it all together at the end with the full spot.
It's pretty good. And then the other one, if you don't watch This Is Us, the show on NBC, This Is Us, and there was a big episode last night that unveiled one of the big storylines. So, spoiler alert, one of the major hooks from season two involves a crock pot starting a fire inside the family's home. And Milo Ventimiglia is the father, the young father. And so his character gets into some trouble because the house starts on fire due to a crock pot that malfunctioned. And so he appeared in a crock pot ad telling everyone, hey, I'm fine. Crock pots are great. You know,
crock
just make
pots
sure
were
you.
Mad. The crock pot folks were mad about this. They're like, they don't start fires. What are you talking
they're
about?
Fine, yeah. And so genius play to get him in one of these ads. It's pretty good.
And plus, the whole thing is a crock pot is meant to be left on all night long. And so now you're going to have paranoid people all over the country.
Oh my God.
Unplugging their crock pot. That's not the point. The point of the crock pot is you can leave it on all night.
Yeah.
And you can have it and cook stuff. And so now the crock pot people are very, very upset.
I think I had three commercial thoughts. For sheer wackiness, I think the Morgan Freeman lip syncing to the Missy Elliott song and what was like a Doritos / Pepsi joint commercial. That was memorable just because, hey, it's Morgan Freeman lip-syncing to Missy Elliott. That's weird. There was the Tide ads that went all game long. This is a Tide ad where you didn't see it, Judd, but they'd show you what was basically a classic ad. It'd be a Clydesdale or it would be, you know, something. Oh, it's Budweiser. This is a Tide ad. Oh. See the clean shirt? It's Tide ad.
Oh, I sort of like that. That's good.
You're right. Those are pretty good.
That's
I thought that
That's
was
good.
Really, really brilliant. Awesome. Really, really well done. And the Bud Light Dilly Dilly, it's dead.
Not working.
Those were terrible.
I never really
horrible.
I've never really connected with those. I don't know.
They brought the Bud Knight, so a guy dressed in medieval knight gear, and I thought those
it just was not funny. Basically,
no, they fell completely flat to me. I thought they were really dumb.
And now Philadelphia has taken it and they've spun it to Philly.
Okay,
so I think once that runs its course, then maybe we can freshen it up.
The Tide campaign sounds really good. That's great. That's good. Marvelous trolling.
Check it out. It was absolutely brilliant.
Let's catch up with Courtney Cronin when we come back here. And then later on, around 12:15, so in 45 minutes from now, Maureen Bausch, who is the CEO of the Minnesota Super Bowl Host Committee. We can recap the entire week, project forward. And here's what I want to know in 45 minutes. Are we going to keep the zip line? Let's keep the zip line up.
No, get rid of it. It scares me to look at it.
Well, you live three towns away. You don't have to look out. It's always about you.
Yes,
right?
It is. I don't like it. It scares me. One thing goes wrong with that zip line and all hell breaks loose.
Oh, really?
Okay, boys?
Okay. All right.
That's all I got to say.
Let's talk Vikings with Courtney next.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
Frankly, I think that dogs don't like men because,
Well, because sometimes they bring bad news.
Mackie and Judd.
Animals sense those things, you know.
On 1500 ESPN.
Love it. To his right. Now lines up behind Foles. Foles. Moves to the right. It goes directly to Clement. Clement reverses it. And the pass goes into the end zone.
To Nick Foles.
It's a touchdown by Nick Foles.
All right. All right. Courtney Cronin, ESPN.com. Gun to the head, because football is serious and we make all decisions with firearms pointed to our temples. If you had to pay 3 years, the next 3 years, and this is your Viking starting quarterback, Nick Foles or Case Keenum?
Oh, God, you had to do this, didn't you?
Of course he did, Courtney.
Well, one is, it's fine. Gun to your head, if you're looking at one just won a Super Bowl, go with the one that just won a Super Bowl.
Right.
Why not?
It is amazing.
But I'm not taking it any further than that. I will not indulge in any of that.
This is reckless speculation week on the Mackie and Judd
Show.
So,
if you won't indulge in that, Courtney, Kirk Cousins, your thoughts here? Because in the past like 5 days, I've seen everything from the Vikings are going to be all in on Cousins to they can't afford that. What are your thoughts about a guy who? And I saw the ESPN report now is that the Redskins, despite the fact they traded for Smith, might actually franchise Cousins. Which would be, I think, incredibly stupid, but your thoughts on the probability, likelihood, or what might happen with Kirk Cousins to Minnesota rumors?
It's interesting, because I saw the franchise tag speculation as well, and I mean, you know, that would be, I don't think that's a smart idea at all, especially when you just go out and get a guy in Alex Smith, and, you know, that seems to be the turning point for the franchise. The only way it would make sense to me for the Vikings to go all in and give, you know, Kirk Cousins, who may not be all that much better than Case Keenum. In the grand scheme of things, the guy has not won a playoff game. Is he really that much better than the three that they have right now that they have to determine between? I don't think so. So, you know, if it's contract negotiations and things getting ugly, that maybe it's just, okay, let's clean house. And let's go after a guy that had no ties to this franchise. It's going to depend on who they bring in at offensive coordinator. That's going to be the most telling thing going forward, because he's going to, as we learned from Rick Spielman last week, he's going to have a huge say in who's quarterback's going to be next year. But I'm not sold on the Kirk Cousins stuff just quite yet, especially after we're hearing, you know, with Washington potentially trying to keep him around.
Yeah. What's your idea of a timeline here for offensive coordinator? Is this going to be like within a week you think they're going to have one? Will they slow play it even more?
It sounds like it. From what we heard from Spielman last week, they're going to maybe do one or two more interviews this week, which is why you were hearing Philadelphia quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo's name in the mix there. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if they finish up interviews this week and then they make a hire next week. And then, so going into the combine, they have their guy, because they're going to want an offensive coordinator down there, because, you know, they're looking at draft picks and their, you know, potential draft picks and scouting and trying to figure out what's next. Because in terms of the chicken and the egg, I asterisk feel like philosophy wise, you want your offensive coordinator in place first, as soon as possible, really. And then you have to get down to the ground, you know, trying to find your quarterback, because free agencies, you know, when they can start negotiating contracts on March 12th, that's not that long away. And they have more than their fair share of, you know, big question marks to negotiate through and figure out.
Give me your interpretation from what Spielman told you guys last week regarding Teddy, because to me, this is a great story, because whenever an executive is asked a question and he decides to steer it to the controversial, something is going on.
It's strange because, and I don't like this part of the NFL where you ask the same question to the people who should be able to answer it and you get the runaround. I mean, it's like covering politics. The language says that what this all boils down to with Teddy Bridgewater, the most important part is, was he physically able to play before week six? It's sort of a moot point because of the rule that if you start the season on the PUP list, you have to be on it for 6 weeks. And as we know, he was medically cleared going into week seven to return to practice. So in terms of the tolling, Rick Spielman said that's not, if that does happen to where he'd make the same salary, the $1.7 million that he made in the 2017 season, because that was the final year of his rookie contract, that is not in Minnesota Vikings' decision. Talking to Dee Smith, the executive director of the NFLPA, he didn't know whose decision it was and who would be, whether it be the Vikings or the NFL, to bring it to the NFLPA, essentially, if they're going to go in court and fight this. So, yeah, the fact that nobody can really give you a clear answer, I think, is an indication that something's up. But, you know, you really hope it doesn't come to that point, because Teddy Bridgewater's probably not going to want to play for the Vikings at all, and it's going to be ugly, and it's going to become a battle if you do decide to pull his contract, considering the fact that he was cleared and he did play. But there is that one stipulation in CBA language, which you need a law degree to understand, that he was on the pup list until week six, but it wasn't his choice because of the mandatory time he had to spend on there.
Yeah. So I know that you didn't get a chance with your own two eyes during the season to watch him at practice other than like the individual stuff, because they close it all off to media. But from everything you can sort of glean, you know, how comfortable do you think the Vikings would be? And maybe this is a different answer for Spielman versus Zimmer versus other stakeholders. How comfortable would they be saying, all right, you're the starting quarterback, it's your turn starting in week one?
You think, okay, he was ahead of schedule. I mean, that to me, when Mike Zimmer said 2 weeks ago that, you know, they evaluated this whole thing and they found out there were like 23 cases and nearly half of them didn't come back, and the earliest one that came back from this injury was 24 months, I think that there was some hesitation that he really wasn't ready. I mean, there's the guys that, they're not going to put somebody out there if he's not physically able to play, and that's fair. But I just don't know if they were truly all in to the fact where, hey, his leg is not going to be an issue going forward, because he was 10 months ahead of, you know, where they expected him to be if he was going to come back at all. And it's interesting because you listen to, like, everybody, Spielman to Mark Wilfs and Mike Zimmer, everybody's saying how inspired they were by Teddy Bridgewater's return and how great of a comeback it was. Is that lip service so they can kind of part ways? Or is it, you know, it's just an interesting thing to bring up because, you know, we didn't get to see what they, you know, apparently is what reading between the lines, they wanted to see him play. But we just didn't get to see it, obviously, with Case Keenum. But, you know, yeah, would they be comfortable with him as their day one starter? You'd think so. You know, especially, I think it's going to depend on who they bring in an offensive coordinator, whether it's, you know, if you in-house a guy like Stefanski, he's worked with him before. He knows probably better than anybody else how far he's at and, you know, with his progress and whether he would be able to last a 16-game season.
What do you think the Vikings can learn from the Eagles' success, Courtney, and the fact that if they now sit down and break down what made Philadelphia so successful, what things can they take away and learn from them?
You know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to be a system quarterback. I think we need to kind of rethink how we look at that phrase where, you know, there aren't, you know, the small sect of Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, you know, Tom Brady, these guys who've come through the game, some still playing, some not, who are Aaron Rodgers, who can defy systems, that's so rare in today's game, that I don't think it's a bad thing, especially what we saw with Nick Foles. The system worked. The run-pass option worked. And that's what got them here. And obviously we saw a different part of his game in the last two games with the deep passes over 20 yards. Like, we didn't see that at all from him when he, you know, as a backup this season and then when he took over early for Carson Wentz. So I don't think it's necessarily, there's such a stigma associated with that. They built a good system around Case Keenum this year, and it was a system that helped them win. So why is that necessarily a bad thing when we look at system quarterbacks and try to evaluate that we need something that's, you know, somebody who's going to be able to work from whatever system you know, you're going to put in the right system for whomever your quarterback's going to be. So why are we so worried about, you know, oh, this guy can't play in other systems? If he's playing in a system that works, why is that a bad thing?
Yeah. Courtney Cronin, ESPN.com. If we thought the Vikings and Eagles were fairly even, maybe even edge Vikings 3 weeks ago, now that you've had time to process two amazingly impressive wins by Philadelphia, what's the most important distinction between the Vikings and the Eagles that has allowed the Eagles to go on and win a Super Bowl and the Vikings looking to reload?
Well, they didn't have the injuries on their offensive line. That's one of them.
Yeah.
I think they were so aggressive with their play calling, and they never faltered with that. I mean, that's something that Doug Peterson, you know, harped upon last night, and just how aggressive they were going for it on fourth down twice. You know, they had 17 in the regular season. Going for it twice with, you know, really critical play calls last night. At the right time, they were able to peak. I think that the Vikings at some point, too, might have peaked too early because of the, you can't fault them. The emotion of the divisional round with the win and the way that they won with a walk-off touchdown it's a lot to overcome to go into the next week. The Eagles didn't have that. I mean, they had a, you know, big win over Atlanta, and they were at home and got to do it. But it's just, you know, I think it's just some of those things that lined up. The Vikings couldn't overcome there. And, you know, the biggest question with this defense still is going to be what happened in that NFC Championship game, because that's not the way a number one defense plays. And I think that, you know, having that aura around them, they didn't perform like it. And that's going to be a huge question of why that happened. Still, that's still being discussed, of why that happened and how that can be remedied so it doesn't happen again on the biggest stage.
Yeah. Hey, did you get a chance to soak in any of the festivities over the last week? What did you think, just in general, of the big event being in town?
I thought the city did great with it. It was around doing work down at, you know, the media center out at Mall of America, which is my first time there. It was exciting, nice place. And the Super Bowl experience downtown was really cool. I mean, I've seen it's kind of the same setup that they do in every city, at least in terms of like the, you know, go kick a field goal, run a 40-yard dash, all that stuff. But I think it's great for kids and families. And the city looked gorgeous. I had a chance this morning to, you know, rewatch the game on TV, and it looked really pretty. I think they did a beautiful job with, you know, getting the city together. And, you know, you hope that a cold weather city, I know that, you know, there's speculation out there that this might be the last one in a place like Minnesota, and you hope that's not the case, because I think the city did a great job.
Yeah, I think we all agree. If it happens to be too cold, then so be it.
Yeah,
like,
can't control it.
It is what it is. But like Judd said, all the things that we could control in this town, I think we're pretty close to flawless. Pretty good stuff. Courtney, great stuff.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks, guys.
Courtney Cronin from ESPN.com. She's
reckless,
a Vikings insider.
If you come on this show, you are required to recklessly speculate about the quarterback situation for the Vikings.
Agreed.
You have no choice.
We should almost make people sign waivers, including callers, that you must be okay with reckless speculation.
If you are asked about a potential Nick Foles trade, as asinine as that might sound, you must address it.
Yeah. We should get to the Darren Revelle tweet, too. We didn't get to that earlier in the hour.
Yeah.
And then later on, we'll talk about Randy Moss, Hall of Fame, Maureen Bausch from the Minnesota Super Bowl host committee. She's the CEO of the committee. She'll join in about a half hour. Mackie and Judd.
The Mackie and Judd Show rolls on.
Are you guys ready to have some fun?
On 1500 ESPN.
Help fight type 1 diabetes by joining 1500 ESPN, as well as Channel 5 and 45 at Mall of America, Saturday, February 24th, for the JDRF One Walk. Join Team KSTP, co-captained by 1500 ESPN's Phil Mackey and Channel 5's Chris Eggert and Megan Newquist, and help us raise money for type 1 diabetes research. For more details and to join the team, head to 1500ESPN.com, keyword events. Together, we can turn type 1 into type none.
We knew this would come down to the wire. At the very end, we knew who we were playing against. But guess what? We won. That's all that matters.
I'm so happy. I've been waiting for this all my life. This is great, man.
My body's shaking. I'm so excited for Philadelphia. This is a great time for us. We deserved it.
We're picking up some hoodies. We're picking up some pennants. We are so excited. We're finally Super Bowl champs. It doesn't feel real at all right now.
Oh, what's going on, Philadelphia?
They're all saying that. They're all saying that this morning.
They deserve to today.
Oh, they can trash talk now.
They can do it now.
Yep. I still stand by everything that was said on this show in the weeks leading up to it.
Yes.
The gap between your bravado and your championship success was so ridiculously wide, but not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Hadn't won a title in the National Football League of any sort since 1960, and now you got one. And as I said, if you can separate your distaste for their fan base with their team, I'm glad their team won. I'm glad they won.
I was rooting for Tom Brady and the Patriots mostly because of the fan base thing. I couldn't separate it enough to allow myself to root for the Eagles.
I'm just saying that I grew to like their team.
Yeah. Here's the tweet that ruffled some feathers over the weekend from Darren Revelle.
I actually wrote about this tweet, yes.
He said, this will be the last Super Bowl for Minnesota. Too much money at stake on Friday and Saturday for cold to keep corporate money away. League can't afford to do it with sponsors needing to activate effectively. I couldn't tell if he was reporting or if he just hated cold weather and was speculating
and got
in a
mad,
moment.
So he decided to say, this is it?
In a crowded, crowded area of downtown Minneapolis and said, bleep it, I'm going to tweet. So I guess if I had to lean one way or the other, will this be the last Super Bowl in the Twin Cities until the next new stadium? I would say, yeah, probably. But the way that all the events went almost flawlessly and the way that the game was such a recognizable game itself, which matters to some degree, like because people are going to think, wow, one of the great Super Bowls of all time happened in Minneapolis. Remember that? I think that does give you pause if you thought going into the week, this is a one and done shot here. The weather's too crappy. Now that the week is over, you can look back and say almost everyone from the league office, media, with the exception of it being cold and it snowed a couple times. Mm-hmm. Those are the only things that would make you say no.
I wrote about this because my feeling is that Revelle didn't just come up with that tweet out of thin air, that he was told something. And I do believe that it's the last Super Bowl that's going to be played here. And I actually think there's a very good chance that in 30 years, point one is this. In 30 years, if this league is still going as strong as it is now or stronger, I think they will go to cities where they don't like their stadium situations and just threaten them and be like, there's nothing coming other than your team will leave. I also think in 30 years...
Well, they do that now.
But they also say, we're threatening you, but you're going to get this nice care package, and you're, of course, going to have to pay us to do it, but we're going to give you a Super Bowl. I think in 30 years, there's a very good chance they're just going to say, build us the stadium, or the Vikings are going to San Diego. I also think in 30 years, if the league is going very strong, you're going to see maybe an occasional fifth city rotate in, but you're going to see the Super Bowl played in Miami, New Orleans, Vegas, L.A. Now, here's the interesting thought, though, that occurred to me after that in 30 years. Is the National Football League in 30 to 35 years from now going to look like it does now? What's it going to be like?
Well, almost assuredly, no, because it's name anything that looks the way that it did 30 years ago.
But what I'm saying is that's far enough down the road where things might be drastically different given the nature of the sport. Given the fact that, you know, with all the concussions, but I do think that this is probably the last one. And if that's the case, we still did a hell of a job.
I would like to see some proof on this. You know, Revelle's tweet is so vague and so veiled. I'll read it again. This will be the last Super Bowl for Minnesota. Well, according to who? Are you talking to somebody in the league office? Are you just speculating? Is it an educated guess? And then he says, too much money at stake on Friday and Saturday for cold weather to keep corporate money away. The league can't afford that. So he's insinuating that the money spent by corporations or advertisers at various events or whatever it may be, that money was drastically reduced enough to the point where the NFL would say, oh, there's just not enough opportunities for sponsored events. You know, maybe, and I'd have to go look and see what some of the other warm weather, but I'm sure there's golf events and things that you would do outside.
And you can go to beaches, exactly,
right,
wear shorts, yes.
But like going to a beach and wearing shorts has nothing to do with like the money that you would get from corporate sponsors, unless he just means fewer people into the Twin Cities.
I think that's exactly what he's saying. I think he's saying that the Super Bowl is a time for the league to reward all of these rich corporations and bring them in. And I think what he's trying to say in that tweet was, in this case, there were probably some that said hard pass if the game is going to be played in Minnesota.
Well, here's a great example. So Fox Sports Radio sent a few of their personalities. We are actually, our broadcast stand was right next to the Fox Sports Radio stand. Mm-hmm. So they had Clay Travis down there and Doug Gottlieb. But the big time televised Fox platforms like Colin Cowherd and Christine Leahy and First Things First with Chris Carter and Nick Wright.
Didn't show.
And then what was the other show? Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp. They all stayed in New York and Los Angeles.
I thought First Take did show.
Not
up.
First Take. The Skip Bayless, Shannon Sharp show.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Undisputed.
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 First Take remake.
Yeah.
You want to call it?
Yeah.
Part two. And we were told off the record it was a budget cut decision by Fox. But is it possible they said, you know what, it's not the most compelling location for us? And like, if it were in Miami, would they have gone?
Yeah, they would.
And would they have brought more corporate money in because now we're broadcasting live and get more sponsors on board?
And the answer, I think, is absolutely yes.
Yeah. But is that enough to not bring another Super Bowl back? Like, is the gap between how much money would have been involved and how much actually
was?
Yes,
I think it is.
Is it wide enough? And I need more facts before I can obviously go with that.
In 92, when the game was first played here, I think it was a very cool event and it was big. Now it takes over an entire town. And we did a very good job there. But if your town does not include golf courses and does not include palm trees, it's going to get, I think, because the game is a fraction of what's important here. I mean, the game is the buildup to the game that week where you have all your parties and you make all of your rich sponsors happy. That's what I think they're intent on being right about.